Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I hate to do this to you guys today. I really felt a little guilty because the more I read, the more I reminded myself of something I've forgotten to do, and that is to ask you a simple question. Did you have your cup of coffee today? Because hopefully by the end of the show, you'll agree with me that the best thing you could do tomorrow morning, maybe Monday morning, give yourself a break, is start thinking about that choice. I realize I don't ask enough of my clients, my patients, that question. And I've started to, and I realize, boy, have I made a mistake. Lots of people are sneaking that cup a day, that second cup a day, that third cup a day. Yes, it's habit forming. Yes, the media will tell you in moderate doses it's okay. I want to use the science today and have you decide. Can you afford that cup, that 100, that 200 milligrams, that 300 milligrams? As always, you got to get to the website. I'm going to tell the story with some pictures. Coffee's a fascinating story. It's got a wonderful history associated with it. Coffee was first, in a sense, discovered in the Middle East a long time ago. And I think, as you can imagine, just about everybody hooked in. You got that pump in the morning. Somehow your day went better. At least it started that way. Maybe back then, maybe long ago, you could afford to do it, because then again, things were different. And the downside to it, that downside in a technologically oriented electrical environment, that downside is harsh. But back then, maybe you could get away with it. You can't today. Let me tell you why. Let's use the science here to understand what coffee actually does. That's the key. All right. As always, get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Not .com.cc. If you're driving, just listen, and when you get home, you get some free time, get to that website. You got to understand this. You want to give this up. It's not good. A book, before I start, if you go to page 26, picture 26, I think one of the most respected books on the downside of caffeine, or Caffeine Blues, by Stephen Chernisky. He's got a master's degree in clinical nutrition. He's a pretty well-known guy. He wrote this book quite a few years ago, but it's one of our benchmark studies. Really, common sense is our benchmark study. Really, if you watch people and you ask yourself, why are they taking that cup in the morning? You know, they love the taste and the color and all this baloney, and it comes down to the fact they're waking up exhausted and starting the day is a struggle. It's their health. It's their compromised health, and there's just no two ways about it. All subjective. Let's take a look at the science. On the website, I'd like you to go to picture number 15. Go to picture 15. I think that'll do it best. Picture number 15, how caffeine works. As always, things that make us feel good. Drugs and types of drugs, synthetic, meaning pharmaceutical, and natural drugs, whatever drugs, are always messing around at the receptor site, the space in between the neurons. The modulation or the flow, the transmission of certain types of electrical impulses, and the types of neurotransmitters from dopamine to serotonin, and so on and so forth, in between those neurons, is always where that elixir will live, whether it's caffeine or cocaine or marijuana. Now take a look at caffeine here on that picture. Adenosine. What is adenosine? Adenosine Well, let's read it, and that's the best way. Adenosine, the molecule, helps prepare the body for sleep by curbing the chatter between nerve cells. So it's a modulator of nerve impulse, adenosine, and it's got to bind to its receptor sites along the nerve pathway. Adenosine slows you down. Adenosine puts you to sleep. Adenosine sounds like, now you've got to use your past education, something that's more parasympathetic oriented. Now, caffeine, on the other hand, blocks the receptor site that adenosine would otherwise bind to. Let's get a picture of that. So we're going to go to a different picture now. Go to picture number 16. It's the next picture, picture 16. There we go. Very simple. Adenosine. Binding into the adenosine receptor. And we're saying that you have increased cell activity, meaning stimulation. But I should say, when adenosine binds into that receptor, you're looking at picture number 16, it relaxes the cell. In terms of your blood vessels, it will vasodilate them. In terms of your mental overload, how many perceptions per unit second you're going to have, whether you feel hyper or whether you feel like you're in the chill zone, adenosine slows that process down. So it gets you ready for sleep. But really, it's a parasympathetic initiator, which means it gets you ready to digest. It gets you ready for higher level creative thought. It gets you ready to relax. It gets you ready to counter the effect of what happens when caffeine binds. When caffeine, go to the lower picture, when caffeine competes with those same receptor sites that the adenosine would otherwise bind to, when it competitively inhibits, you don't get the slow down part of it. You get the speed up part of it. And we could call this strength and peak power and delayed fatigue. And because it stimulates production of dopamine, we could call it you get an enhanced elation, a euphoric feeling. And we could say, in a sense, that's all good. And understand that, because when people argue, usually from the caffeine industry, when you take a look at that book by Chernisky, Relaxed Caffeine Blues, when you take a look at that book, he took the time to really go into who's supporting the hullabaloo about how good caffeine is in moderate consumption, how it's healthy for you. He's the guy that really went behind the scenes to study who's funding those researches. And invariably, almost invariably, those researches are funded by the caffeine industry. Somewhere along that line, you're going to find these publications saying that caffeine in moderate consumption, nobody will say caffeine in extreme consumption. Caffeine in 300, 400, 500 milligrams per day. Caffeine in one of those big Starbucks jugs that people line up around the block for every single morning of their life. Caffeine over 12 ounces, nobody makes a case for. But caffeine up to a couple of hundred milligrams, up to even 300 milligrams a day. 300 milligrams a day is about 16 ounces. There's variations depending on the strength of the coffee. But one cup is what people will call often the moderate amount. The publications behind it, if you get into Chernisky's book, Caffeine Blues, one of the landmark books on it, are all funded one way or the other by the caffeine societies, the caffeine industry, Nestle's, any of these companies that use caffeine in their foods. It's not just coffee, right? You've got Red Bull, one of the biggest multi-billion dollar hits of the last 25 years, Red Bull, chocolate. But caffeine finds its way into everything. It's not just those drinks. It's certainly not just coffee. All the variations of tea, from the green tea to the black tea, these are all bound by the caffeine industry, so the publications supporting it. This is what you have to understand about caffeine, and hopefully a number of you will have the background science to appreciate the statement I'm going to make. That caffeine, which, by the way, is a pesticide, caffeine from the caffeine plant. The purpose of caffeine in the plant is to make insects pass it over. It doesn't taste good to insects. If you get into the history of caffeine and coffee production, caffeine growing correctly isn't something that your average insect wants to munch on. The caffeine is a bitter poison. The caffeine, really, in the body is to shock the nervous system. The purpose of caffeine in the plant as a protective pesticide, the function of caffeine in our body is as a shock. And what do our bodies do? I find this fascinating. What do our bodies do when we eat something that shocks us? We go into adrenal stress. A message goes to the adrenals, and the adrenals are squeezed so that you get, per ingestion of caffeine, 100, 200, 300, 400, 600, 700 milligrams, you get a purge. It squeezes the adrenals of its available adrenaline. It's a shock. It's like you're tired, you're fatigued, and boom. Think of it. Think of that morning you were fatigued. Think of that moment you were thinking about food. Think of that moment you were craving something, and something shocks your system. The walls rattle in an earthquake. There's a car accident. You get some bad news. Instantaneously, think about it. Your hunger ceases. You don't have to go to the bathroom. And all of a sudden, you get a surge of energy. I want you to just sink into that moment. That moment where you just didn't feel like moving, and all of a sudden you're at high speed. The best one is when the alarm clock forgot to go off. Think of that morning, you're exhausted. Think of that morning, you got home late. You forgot to set the alarm clock. You woke up, you had that pit in your stomach, and you bet you've got 5 minutes to get to work, and it's the first day of the job. In approximately 10 seconds, you dash out of bed, you dash to the coffee pot, you pour the cup, you run out the door with half your clothes on and get to work only 10 minutes late. That type of a moment. That's what coffee's doing all the time. There shouldn't be an argument about coffee. There shouldn't be a black and white about it. What you're doing with coffee consumption is you're squeezing your adrenals. You're squeezing your adrenals to produce the amount of adrenaline that they can summon up and the amount of cortisol. Now, right there, the argument for coffee should end. Done. Goodbye. Coffee improves your life experience, your well-being. Well, look, if your cortisol spikes, one thing you're going to do is you're going to surge your insulin. And if your cortisol and your insulin spike, yeah, you're going to mobilize your sugars out of your liver into your muscles for increased energy. But you're also going to send every little bit of fat, every little bit of sugar to your fat. Increased cortisol increases the conversion of your essential fatty acids, your sugars, to fat. In the acute phase of it, the increase in adrenaline and the surge of cortisol will function for your well-being. Thus, you're late for work and you've got the energy to zoom. Thus, there's some sort of a, you know, that stereotype of the tiger out in the jungle and you've got to sprint to get away. It's there for you, but you see, the rest of the day, and if you're consuming it chronically the rest of your week, and if you're consuming it chronically for years, the rest of your life, brings your cortisol up at high levels at all times. High cortisol is the downside of the stress response. High cortisol keeps us in a sympathetic dominant state. High cortisol blocks repair. High cortisol will block the S4 phase of sleep. The repair state of sleep. This is such a common practice that cup of coffee, and of course, just like Häagen-Dazs did it with ice cream, Starbucks has done it with coffee. It's cool to have that cup of coffee. It's cool to walk into Starbucks, sit down with your computer, and do your work. It's a social thing. It's a way of life. It's how we know community. I mean, these people are smart. These people are smart. And everybody's doing it. And people out there looking for nutritional help, looking to get out of disease, are doing it and forcing themselves into sympathetic dominance. Do you know, if you're on caffeine, you can't even clean your palate. Caffeine changes the receptor sites in the tongue. The way you experience food is dramatically altered. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you done caffeine, gotten the high? And then found later on in the day, about 4 or 5 hours later, you get that dip. Yes, you have. You get extremely hungry. You can't hold your blood sugar. I want you to check the cycle out, the caffeine cycle. And I'm talking about a cup a day. If you think I'm wrong, if you think that cup or 2 cups a day is not addictive, try giving it up. Go ahead. Give it up. Oh, you just love the smell of it. It's the smell. No, it's not. Do not kid yourself. It's the enhanced dopamine production. It's the adrenal rush. After that, as a very poor third, fourth and fifth is the smell. Lots of things are dark brown. Drink those instead. What is that dip later on in the day? Well, again, you've got to go back to the science to understand what's happening when you line up for your mocha latte. The adrenal squeeze. You get that adrenaline rush. Your cortisol levels go up. You're in sympathetic dominance, so your appetite's suppressed. You bet coffee's an appetite suppressant. It's an appetite suppressant, therefore you'll burn fat faster. No, you don't. Therefore, you lose weight. No, you don't, because the back end of this is bad. The back end of it's really bad. Caffeine is forcing a ton of sugar in the blood. Caffeine raises blood sugar. Because caffeine's going to mobilize the stored glycogen of the liver into the blood. Caffeine is going to squeeze. Do this. Just do this. Do this for the best high, the best 2-hour high. Just try this and you'll see what I'm talking about. Do it tomorrow. Tonight, I want you to have a heavy carb meal. Those of you who take care of your health, those of you who don't, tonight, have a heavy carb meal. Pick the carbohydrate that you can digest. A ton of rice. A ton of pasta. Eat more of it than normal. And I say to do that because that excess glucose is going to get stored in the liver as glycogen. So your glycogen reserves in the liver are going to fatten up. We call this carbohydrate loading. You do this before athletic events. A quick athletic event. If you're going to do a 30-minute athletic event, a 40-minute athletic event, carbo load. Used to do it all the time. Understand the science of it very, very well. And then what you're going to do is you're going to get up the next morning and you're going to have your 300, 400 milligrams of caffeine. Even 200 milligrams, even a cup and a half, a little more than a cup of a high caffeine coffee, a double espresso. You'll get to your 200 to 300 range. If you really want to do it, have one of those Starbucks 16, those Venti, Mocha, whatever they are. Bring it up a notch. Off a night of carbs. And get to the track. I don't care who you are. A bad knee, a bad ankle, a good knee. You haven't run in years. Go to the weight room. Go to the track. And feel like you're 20 years old again. I guarantee you. You're going to feel the upside of caffeine. Now do this. Just go through your day. And get ready for the afternoon. Because somewhere around 2, 3, 4 hours, you're not just going to get hungry. Your blood sugar is going to start plummeting down to 50. You're going to get the shakes. You're going to get tired. You're going to have a tidal of hypoglycemia in the body. Because that's what high cortisol does. That's what adrenaline surges do. They take your blood sugar high. They squeeze your liver of all its glycogen, and they mobilize all the glycogen in the muscle cells so that your cells can use them in the Krebs cycle and in phosphorylation to make your ATP. So your blood sugar goes up. Mind you, you're getting this great surge of adrenaline off the coffee, and unless you're dead or near dead, the adrenals have a little more to put out. And that's that upside. That's that glorious 2 to 3 hours. What happens after you purge the glycogen reserve out of your liver? What happens if you fatigue your adrenals because you squeezed all the adrenaline out of them? Haven't you ever had that moment where, for whatever reason, you have to exert yourself tremendously? You get into an argument. There's an accident on the freeway. There's an emergency disaster. Somebody's sick. You rush to the hospital. Any of these things. Look at the color of your face about 3 hours later. You ever notice it's a little pale? It's a little yellow? It's a little gray? I want you to do that. Maybe you're a little pale and a little yellow and a little gray all the time. It's telling you you're out of adrenaline. It's telling you you're in near adrenal exhaustion. You remember getting upset when you were 20 and you could shake it? Go ahead, get upset when you're 50. Really start screaming. Let that heartbeat go up to 160, 180, 200. Let your blood pressure spike to 200 over 140. Give yourself a day or two of that. And by the afternoon, your joints ache. You start looking gray around the gills. You're doing that every single day with coffee. Yes, you. Even if it's one cup, you're doing it. So after that blood sugar spike, with that surge of adrenaline, with that surge of glycogen, with that surge of glycogen from your muscle cells, after your cells get every single benefit to phosphorylate and produce that ATP, after that, you are out of steam. There's no more adrenaline to what? To counter the fact that your blood sugar is dropping. Normally, when your blood sugar drops, your adrenals come to the rescue and you mobilize your fatty acids. See, this is why you should run 60, 75, 90 minutes. This is why you should be working out 60 to 120 minutes a day. Yeah, at least 75 minutes. Even the Surgeon General says this. You know, the Surgeon General's gone from 20 minutes three times a week now to like 75 minutes 3 to 5 times a week. Things have changed over there. It ain't C. Everett Koop anymore. We're out of the Betty Crocker generation. Yeah, I know, you walk 20 minutes, 3 times a week. Yes, you exercise. You take that nice little stroll. You are kidding yourself. You're out of your bird to think that's going to do anything for you. Yes, it's better than nothing. Sorry. It doesn't do anything. You want results? Move that dirty ass. A good 60 to 90 to 120 minutes a day. Then you'll get the benefits of this. And when you're doing it, your body's trying to mobilize after 60 minutes. It's fatty acids. You're burning fat to create sugar. You know what drives that? Adrenaline and cortisol. And if you're addicted to that coffee thing, by the afternoon when you get that plummet, where normally you could burn fat to make sugar, so you, when you got that dip, you could just not really stuff your face. You don't have that. You have to stuff your face. You're in real hypoglycemia with no adrenal backup. Now, why anyone would tell you that coffee's thermogenic is beyond me. Why anyone would say, I put it there. Look at that. Picture 10. Caffeine for fat loss. There it is. Look at picture number 11. We just love it. Get into that fat-burning zone faster than ever with caffeine to help break down triglycerides in your blood before they get stored. Anyone want to bet me that the coffee industry or an analog to the coffee industry or someone with motive put that ad out there? Does anybody want to bet me that? And just because you see it, you have to understand the media and you've got to understand journalism. People do this all the time. Yeah, you read it in Vanity Fair. Now, there's a reference landmark magazine. Yeah, you read it in GQ. Yeah, you read it in Muscle and Fitness. Yeah, a bunch of scientists did it. You have to find out who funds the study. Oh, yeah, the National Institute of blah, blah, blah funded the study. You have to find out who funds them. Before you believe what's in print, you have to be really good at following the money trail. You have to do this. If you don't do this, you're not being responsible to yourself. There is an alternate path, though. All you got to do is understand the science. No one's going to argue that coffee stimulates the excitatory phase of neurotransmission. Nobody. It's what it does. Right there. Right there. That means you're going to have an adrenal and a cortisol surge. Right there, that means you're in sympathetic dominance. Right there, chronic sustained high cortisol, high adrenaline, sympathetic dominance is going to put you at the mercy of everything that people claim, like Chernysky, is the danger of coffee. But don't believe me. Don't believe his book, Caffeine Blues. Just believe that article in Vanity Fair. No, this is what you do. Go off your coffee. Go ahead. Go off your coffee. Coffee's a false high. You can't make your day productive by squeezing your adrenals. But you're sure you can. You're sure you can because you had to operate that tractor for 2 hours. You had to paint that room. You had no energy. The coffee get... No arguments. Coffee as an emergency, coffee as a pinch hitter, coffee as something you do in an acute instance, that's a different story. I'll give you that. That makes sense, but the downside to the chronic use of it, you are going to pay. So if you're thinking of coffee on that day where you just had to forgive yourself, where life was just crazy, where things didn't work, where it was an emergency the night before, where you couldn't get your sleep, well, then for that short burst to get things going to prevent a bigger catastrophe, sure. Sometimes you have to kill a few troops to win the war. Sometimes you have to sacrifice things you don't want to sacrifice, your health, in the short term, to save the bigger picture. Now, if you're going to think of coffee like that, well, that's reasonable. That's intelligent. But that's not what you're doing. You're doing a cup to two cups a day thinking it's okay. And that's not what the science is going to tell you. Now, time being always the restraint, I'm not going to get into the thing about dopamine. Dopamine, yeah, that's what you don't make when you get Parkinson's. But dopamine's a neurotransmitter produced up there in the substantia nigra of your midbrain. And dopamine produces feelings of elation. It's a mood enhancer. Amphetamines, speed. Coffee, speed. Doesn't coffee kind of remind you of speed? Have you ever taken a little speed back there in the college days? A little speed to stay and study up all night? Did you ever see people that were chronic speed addicts? How their teeth rot out? You know what that is? That's speed, like coffee, stimulates the adrenals so intensely that the high cortisol pulls all the calcium out of the enamel of the teeth. And as it pulls all the calcium out of the enamel of the teeth, your teeth rot out. Caffeine is speed. And like speed, like amphetamine, like things that are like that, coffee stimulates the production of dopamine. Speed does that too. Cocaine blocks the ability of the neurotransmitter to clear dopamine from the nerve ending. We talked about this with serotonin last week. We talked about serotonin in between the synapses, in the synapse, in the space between the nerve cells. We talked about serotonin being produced to make you feel euphoric, and then serotonin being absorbed back. And selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Prozac, etc., block the reuptake of the serotonin, thus Prozac. And so you feel high longer. That's exactly what speed does. That's exactly what cocaine does to dopamine. Now, caffeine doesn't block the uptake of dopamine. Caffeine stimulates the nerve ending to produce more dopamine. So you're always in that neurotransmitter there, playing around with serotonin, playing around with dopamine, playing around with your enkephalins, your endorphins, your opioids. There's a whole world of this is supposed to bind to the receptor, adenosine supposed to bind to the receptor, and something else synthetically, exogenously, meaning something from the outside comes in and binds to that receptor site instead. And now what your body can't make binds to that. Now what your body made can't bind to that receptor site. So what is coffee? Yeah, it's a mood enhancer. Is it a vasodilator or a vasoconstrictor? No, coffee is a vasoconstrictor. A vasoconstrictor of the way level or the peripheral level. Coffee does not vasodilate, it vasoconstricts. The chronic use of caffeine is going to give you fibromyalgia. The chronic use of caffeine is going to make that neck pain worse. The chronic use of caffeine is going to withdraw blood from your hands and feet. Go ahead, feel your hands and feel your feet. If you are a chronic caffeine drinker, they're cold. A big part of the reason they're cold is you are chronically vasoconstricted in the periphery. You're also vasoconstricted in the brain. It's not vasodilating your blood vessels to the brain. It's vasoconstricting them. So caffeine, even in the upscale of it, the upswing, when you're doing it to get high, well, it may make your memory more clear because you've got that enhanced dopamine. It may make your memory more clear because of that blood pressure surge. But I can guarantee you this, and there's been study after study after study done. Don't do it for your exams. Don't do it when you want the higher level of thought. Don't do it when you have to sit down and brainstorm against problems. Do not do caffeine to problem solve. I think the best cartoon is picture 23. Go to picture number 23. Drink coffee. Do stupid things faster with more energy. That is what you're doing with coffee. If you are taking your cup or two, think of the number of people in Starbucks. Do you know we drink 480 million? That's a 12-year-old statistic. I'm sure it's doubled. We drank, as of 14 years ago, 480 million cups a day. That's like 2 cups per person. And lots of people don't drink coffee, which means lots of people are drinking 3 to 5 to 6 cups of coffee a day. Not to mention the caffeine in the chocolate. Not to mention the caffeine in the green tea, the black tea. Not to mention the caffeine in the medicines. One of them, I don't know, what is it, Tylenol, aspirin, something's got caffeine in it also. Caffeine finds its way in everywhere because it makes you feel good. So you can do stupid things faster with more energy. And that is what being online in Starbucks feels like, at least to me. like an idiot online with a bunch of other idiots, giving money, just peeing it away unnecessarily for idiocy. I don't know about you. Starbucks feels like that. And then, of course, sit there at the table with the computer and pretend you don't want to talk to anybody. You're just there doing work before you get to work so you can do stupid things faster with more energy. Thank you, America. This is no good. Now, does that sink into you? You read the articles. Read the articles I've attached today, because we have alternatives. Read Chernisky's book on caffeine blues. Understand it is another, and yes, it's addictive. It's addictive, and you know how you know it's going to be addictive? Go off it. Yeah, read all the articles about it's really not addictive. If you're only at 100 milligrams of caffeine per day, which is a strong cup of black coffee, say, of coffee, it's not addictive. Go off it and see what happens. Challenge that opinion by going off it and watch what happens. You're exhausted. You don't want to get out of bed. You don't feel good. You're irritable. You feel like your job and your life and your family, it's all a pain. So it's addictive. Here's the science. This is fascinating. Take a look at the science behind the addictions in coffee. So let's go to those neurotransmitter pages. Let's see here. I think the best will do for you. Alrighty, there's a couple missing here today. Let's go to 15, back to 15. We went for that again. Adenosine, which is blocked by caffeine. Adenosine, which you need to keep the blood vessels in vasoconstriction. Adenosine, which you need to slow down your neurotransmission. Keep calm enough to think deeply enough. Stay cool and calm and collected, not hyper and irritable and antsy and corporate. That adenosine is blocked. It can't get to the receptor site, that thing that looks like a little cup. We're looking at page 15 now, picture 15. What the caffeine is bound into, that little purple cup-like thing, that's the receptor site. What the body does when you're on caffeine is it builds more receptor sites. The reason it builds more receptor sites is it's trying to enhance the probability that the free adenosine is going to bind anyway. It's going to counter the effect of the caffeine. So I want you to make sure you get this. Adenosine binds to the receptor site. In the presence of caffeine, caffeine binds to the receptor site. The body's response, the body really knows. The body's response is to increase the number of receptor sites so that hopefully the remaining adenosine can still bind and balance out the caffeine. The body's going to do this. It's going to make more receptor sites. It's going to hope those receptor sites are bound by the available adenosine. The day you go off caffeine, the day you go off caffeine, all these receptor sites are still hanging out. Your body's made all these new receptor sites. It's made extra receptor sites because it was countering the caffeine. Now, it's hog heaven for the adenosine, and you get a ton of adenosine binding to a ton of those receptor sites because you didn't take the caffeine to block it. Now, what does the adenosine do? It is going to put you to sleep. It is going to make your head feel like 500 pounds. It is going to vasodilate your blood vessels so your head is going to be filled with blood. You are going to get the worst pounding migraine of your life. And you know what you're going to do then? Hopefully you're going to have the common sense to go back on a little caffeine. Happens to me all the time with clients. You tell them, no matter how many times you tell them, to gradually slow down on your caffeine. I tell people all the time, if you really need to get off coffee, and we make that deal, I want you to gain 5 pounds this month. I don't care. If you've been on 2 to 6 cups a day for the last year, sometimes, often, usually, 4 years, 6 years, 10 years. Don't go cold turkey. Please use your common sense. If you're going to do that, simply start cutting down and doing something really sinful in its place. Eat more chocolate chip cookies. Eat more chocolate. Eat more ice cream. Eat more potato chips. Eat more sugar. Drink more wine. Get fat. Just like people who have to get off cigarettes. They get fat. Just trade vices. I'm here today to tell you that one of the best ways to get off your addiction is to find a better vice. André Gide, G-I-D-E, André Gide, he had a saying, success is choosing the best vice. Not you. You don't have any vices. I know that. And you would never accept your vice. You just live with it in secret. No. Choose a better vice. If you have to get off caffeine, eat more, drink more, party more, do something more, and then get off gradually. If you go cold turkey, for reasons I just explained, you're going to have so many available receptor sites for so much available adenosine that you're going to vasodilate yourself into a migraine for a day, maybe 4 days, or worse. You're not going to move. You're going to fall asleep. You're not going to have any energy. It is going to be hell, and you're going to go back on coffee again. Little side note there. Now, here's another little thing about coffee. GABA. GABA aminobutyric acid. G-A-B-A. It's a neurotransmitter that operates down in the intestinal tract. You bet. And good old GABA, under the influence of caffeine, it blocks it. Okay? What GABA does, GABA is part of that, see the show last week, enteric nervous system. By the way, almost I forgot. Two spaces left for tomorrow. I'm going to do another 8 hours on stem cells. Because you can regenerate your body. I don't care how diseased you are. If you kick into your body's natural healing mechanisms, if you're willing to do the process, not lie to yourself about herbs and lie to yourself about quick fixes and lie to yourself about whatever you're lying to yourself about. If you're really interested in getting into health, grassroots, herbs included, because herbs will speed it up, learn the process. Your body's got adult stem cells. Those stem cells are there, and you can ignite them from the bone marrow or from the cell itself. The cell of the organ that they've told you is dying. They're there for you to take advantage of. 8 hours tomorrow I'm going to do that. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Make a call. Listen to the show I did a few weeks ago on stem cells. Make a call if you're interested. Don't ask us a lot of questions to explain what it's about because we're not going to do it. I did a one-hour show on it a couple of weeks ago. Listen to that show. And last week I did the show on the enteric nervous system, how Prozac screws up the relationship between a happy gastrointestinal tract and your brain. Happy gut, happy brain, the brain-gut connection, and how Prozac and all those SSRIs block it. Today, same thing. Caffeine interferes with the production, with the, not the synthesis, the transmission or the chemical initiative of GABA, GABA aminobutyric acid, down there to calm your nervous system in your gut without putting you to sleep. GABA is part of what puts your gut in parasympathetic frame. GABA is what allows your intestinal villi, those little snail-like antennas, gazillions of them on the inside of your intestinal tract, your IBS, your ulcerative colitis, your colitis, your gastritis, the number two cause of malady in America, IBS, all as a matter of the intestinal villi squeezing and twisting and screaming in anguish and agony and you can't absorb your food, and you inflame, and the inflammation gives you your ulcerations, or your IBS, or your diarrhea, or your constipation. All in all, the parasympathetic intestinal villi, GABA, enteric nervous system is completely and totally annulled. It is neutralized in the presence of caffeine. Caffeine promotes your IBS. Caffeine promotes your digestive irritation, your irritability, your leukocyte production. In other words, eating under the influence of caffeine. Well, you took it in the morning. Now it's the afternoon. No. Especially depending on who you are. But no matter who you are, the caffeine you take in the morning is operating to dehydrate you, to stress your kidneys, and to definitely keep you sympathetic dominant throughout the whole day. So it's affecting your GABA mechanism in your gut later on in the day, while it's lowering your blood sugar. Now, let's take a look at that collectively. Let's forget about caffeine withdrawal. Let's forget about living in sympathetic dominance. Let's just look at caffeine. Let's forget about peripheral vasoconstriction of blood. Cold hands, cold feet. But it's not hands and feet. It's the muscles of your back. Under your skin is your musculature. That musculature is deprived of blood. It increases your muscular tension. Not during the 2 hours you're flying high with your dopamine levels through the roof and your adrenaline surge, 3 to 4 to 6 to 8 to 10 to 12 to 16 to 20 hours to 24 hours later until you do the next gulp of coffee. Hail Starbucks. Starbucks, Quaker Oats, pancakes, McDonald's. Where is the America? Where's the America that understood how to hunt deer? Where was the America that knew how to eat the organs on the farm? Where was the America that knew how to cultivate soil? It ain't there Monday morning when you're stuck in traffic on the way to work on 3 cups of coffee. Look at it down in the GI tract. It blocks the GABA. The intestinal villi squeeze and twist. You can't absorb your food. It promotes all the ulcerative, irritative, free radical, oxidative, high epithelial cell turnover in the digestive tract. Unbelievable. Time limiting, I can't continue. You look at the show later on. You get to the website later. Now, have enough time to offer a couple of solutions. I might do an entire show on this, the adaptogens, the adaptogenic herbs. The herbs that don't squeeze your adrenals, the herbs that don't beat. Using coffee to sustain energy is like beating your horse with a stick. You want your horse to do what your horse is supposed to do, or your animal, do you beat it with a stick? That is what you're doing online in Starbucks. You're beating your horse with a stick. Sometimes a horse needs a beat over the head. Okay, fine. Then sometimes you can go to Starbucks. When you have an emergency and you have a stubborn horse, maybe it needs a strong hand. Maybe. But constantly sustaining it that way is literally beating your animal because you're beating your adrenal glands to death. That's not what adaptogenic herbs do. Adaptogenic herbs, too. On the site, I've got a couple of articles up. One is cordyceps, and the other one is deer antler. If you want to get into energy in the morning, if you want to get into understanding how to use nature, divine nature, to create energy, just pure energy, forget that you didn't sleep, forget that you're not eating right, forget that you're overweight, forget that you're stressed, forget that you're fat deficient, forget that your gallbladder's plugged, forget that you're highly acidic, forget that you're extremely emotional, forget all these things. Let's just take you as you. Get into the adaptogens. Cordyceps. See that little boy on picture 19? Cordyceps. Little Tibetan boy, way up there. Cordyceps grows at about 11,000 feet. Cordyceps is a fungus that eats a caterpillar. So look at picture number 18. Look at picture number 18. Wild Cordyceps sinensis at 16,000 feet. I mean, just look at that. Look at that. Doesn't that make your day? Don't you think there's a way out of the rotten hole you live in? Out of your misery, when God can put a caterpillar with a fungus growing on the top of his head and mankind can figure out that that's good to eat? Don't you think there's something marvelous going on here? Cordyceps, used by the Chinese Olympics way back a couple of decades ago. They beat us to a pulp. They didn't do drugs. They did cordyceps. You read about it. Cordyceps. Take it. Now, how do you take it? How would you take a caterpillar that's parasitized by a fungus? The fungus eats the head off the caterpillar, and the entire concoction is stuffed into the belly of a duck and cooked slow over 5 hours, or put into a vegetable capsule. Premier Research Labs has an amazing cordyceps. Adrenovin, as some of you might know it, is an amazing cordyceps. Great deal of brilliant care is taken to produce that cordyceps. Take as many of those as you need to get your high. It's non-toxic. It's safe in high dosage. With all the attacks on herbs, there's not an article against it. You can't find it. Consult your physician before using any of these things, of course. Ask him if it's okay. And once it's approved, stuff your face with it in the morning. Take the high end of the dosage. If you don't feel your energy surge, take a higher end of the dosage. Take it twice a day. Use it. Get to know it. If you have anxiety when you do it, take the amount down. Learn to regulate your dose. Nobody really knows your dose. That's a myth. Doctors, the best of them, know the ballpark of your dose. After that, your dose has to be adjusted to you. And don't be scared. Show a little moxie. Show some guts. If you've got enough guts to destroy your life at Starbucks every morning, you have enough guts to throw a little cordyceps down your throat. Do that until you get some energy. Because that's building your adrenals. That's repairing your adrenals so they can do what they're supposed to do. And that's what you're missing. There's ginseng. There's royal jelly. There's all the bee products like bee pollen. There's rhodiola. There's deer antler, which we're going to get to a minute ago. But we're going to just talk about cordyceps right now. And the adaptogens, adaptogens meaning all those herbs, and dose. You find the dose according to what makes you feel calm but not edgy. Calm but not edgy. The hallmark of the adaptogen, the dose for you, is the dose that makes you feel calm but not edgy. When you do too much, you're not going to be calm. You may have energy, but you're not going to be calm. When you don't do enough, you're going to say, I don't feel it. And if you really do a lot of different types of adaptogens and you don't feel it at all, yes, I'm talking to you, and you don't feel it at all, you don't feel it because you are so sympathetic dominant, you're in trouble. So let's deliver that one straight. Those of you who do adaptogens and don't feel anything, you are so heavily sympathetic dominant that nothing gets through. That is not a good thing. And if your constitution is strong, you'll hold up. But it is working against you, and it is a definite sign that you've desensitized yourself considerably. If you give cordyceps to young athletes, they feel it. A young, healthy athlete to cordyceps will feel it. If a young, healthy athlete fields cordyceps, and you're 60 years old sitting there, or 70, and you're sitting there saying, I don't feel a thing, you are living in sympathetic dominance. I promise you this. Now, deer antler, hail that wonderful herb. Deer antler, there's deer velvet and deer antler. Deer velvet is the fuzz off the antlers. Deer antler is the antler itself. The antler falls off. It ossifies hard and drops. So let's not talk about killing the animals and the rest of it. It's really, really not the issue here. If it's done correctly, if it's done in accordance with nature, like eating meat, there's a divine intelligence and a dance that one does with nature. So let's forget all the hullabaloo. That's from improper processing of meat and deer antler and deer and everything leads to these atrocities. But in the high sense of it, you get your hands on real deer antler. There, picture number 21. There's a fantastic brand of deer antler. That's not deer velvet. Deer velvet is different. You got to understand the difference. Deer antler. You play with deer antler. There on picture 28 is a deer farm. And what they do is they harvest antler. And there's a variety of ways to do that, and we're not going to get into it. But the bottom line is, those are two adaptogens. And if you take them and you have a relative degree of autonomic balance, a relative degree of autonomic balance, you'll find that substitute for coffee. Again, man synthesizes chemicals, and we overlook the divine. We do it every time, and in the long run, we pay. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, hopefully offering you a fine argument to give up coffee gradually on Monday. 714-850-1007. I need two serious people for the school. Just come, don't ask questions. See you next weekend.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.